This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can also get rewards points delivered too. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Hello and good evening and welcome. We're recording the episode, would you believe, 96, can't believe it, episode 96 of the Always Wolves podcast. And we're joined tonight by Manny, Jason.
How you doing, everybody?
And Jack. Jason, obviously, and from the Always Wolves, from the Wolf Whistle podcast, just done Bully on his hundreds, and you've got Jeff Thomas coming out later on the week. Manny is in full recovery mode from your epic adventures, and Jack, who everyone really loves here on the channel on the extra time, has jumped on for his full podcast debut tonight. How are you, gentlemen?
Good. Very good.
Tired after the journey last night, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, I saw something on the Samosa group. Someone asked if you'd actually walked there last night.
Yeah, you know what? On Facebook, I just made a bit of a quip saying 160 miles, 4 hours. That's a record for me walking to Palace. And I actually got a couple of comments from people saying, oh, well done. You did another walk. They actually believed it.
And I was like, and he got winning donations as well from it.
Mate, I was really impressed, actually, because I saw that you actually went to Palace last night. And, you know, I go to pretty much every away game. Jack does as well. And Jason goes to quite a lot. And I don't think, Jack, you made it, did you?
No.
Jason?
No, I got offered tickets, but no.
You know, I had tickets, Dave, and I just...
I'm a plastic.
To get rid of him and just thought, what the hell, you know.
Did you go with the boys?
No, just with my youngest. Jeevan was at work, so, we had to leave about 2 just to get there for, 6. Otherwise, you just catch the traffic. And we actually drove through central London thinking it would be a quicker route. Oh, dear. Anyway.
That was a mistake. What time did you get to the ground?
Yeah, we got there really early. We got there early. We were there, well before, an hour before the kick-off. Because it was ridiculous, 8:15. On a Tuesday, night, a match so far away, they've just got no regard for, fans as normal. But yeah,
crazy. As I say, I couldn't get the time out of work, so I couldn't go. It's pretty much similar for Jack and Jason, I'm guessing as well. But you made it there. We are going to be obviously kicking off with the Crystal Palace game, and then we're going to get stuck into the juicy stuff in terms of the next manager. But let's talk about the Palace game first last night. Manny, what was the atmosphere like there generally before, during and after the game?
To be honest, Dave, there was a lot of tickets. We saw a lot of tickets floating about, and people were sort of, trying to get rid of tickets. And a lot of them, I think members probably got their hands on tickets for the first time for an away game. And we was probably a bit worried that there's going to be a few empty seats, but fair play to the Wolves away fans, the crowd that came there, because literally there weren't that many empty seats at all. It was pretty packed away end. I don't know what the exact figure was. So, really good following for it. like I said, Tuesday, 8:15. Terrible place to go to. Terrible, terrible place.
Even on the better days?
Even to park and to be in. There was actually a who were from London, and they were going to their second ever away day, and they saw me and Satnam, and they ran towards us, and they said, "Can we walk with you? Because we don't feel safe."
Oh, right, because it was like they're not used to
it. It's a little bit, you know, South London, it's a little bit hairy around there. You know, the streets around Crystal Palace, they're not the best in the world to be walking around, especially when it gets dark. So, but the atmosphere, I have to say, from the Wolves fans, considering we've lost all our songs, was really, really good. You know, that they made a real good atmosphere. Palace literally didn't pipe up until obviously they scored.
They
didn't hear the squeak out of Palace. I mean, without that drum, they wouldn't be doing anything. That drum was banging on, and they have got about like 300 fans who sing in this little chorus.
Their little ultras.
Yeah, and the fans were great. You know, fans really backed the team. The team was obviously a bold selection, I thought. I liked it, and it actually proved that way than the way we started. So, you know, it went really well, to be fair. I was really enjoying the game.
Yeah, at half time, everyone was so up. Jack and Jason, did you get to watch the game on the TV?
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched it on Amazon, Yeah, other streaming sites were available, but yeah, it was good. So,
what did you make of it, Jack?
I mean, I'd echo what Manny said. I think for 45 minutes, I was quietly optimistic. I thought there's a bit of a tactical plan here. There's the lineup's kind of a bit of a gamble, but it's worked so far. I thought Bueno coming in kind of showed exactly what you want from a young player coming in. He was fearless. He kind of wasn't bogged down by the bad results we've had. He was kind of like just fresh to the team, wasn't he? Brought a bit of energy. I thought, like I said, there's a bit of a tactical plan in terms of trying to hit them on the break, getting Nunes further forward. Kept Zaha very quiet first half. I think Semedo deserves a lot of credit. I'm sure we'll come on to Semedo when we talk about the second half. But first half, when he kept Zaha very, very quiet. And like you say, I think Steve Davis had probably got the team selection right. I know he was forced a little bit in terms of who was available and who wasn't. But he could easily have put Johnny in at left back, couldn't he? But he went, no, I'm going to go with Bueno. You know, he put Boubacar in instead of Moutinho, which I thought was a big call to make given Joe's reputation. But again, I thought that worked for the best part of 45 minutes. So, you know, at half-time, we're all sitting there thinking, hang on a minute, we're up to 12th here. We're winning a game, back-to-back wins it could be, and it's all looking positive. But I do think conceding a minute into the second half just absolutely killed us.
Talking about that second half, Jason, it was like the Wolves players came out on the pitch early, but it was kind of they were still in the dressing room because they were so cold for that goal. Both Boubacar Traore and Semedo should have done far better, didn't you not think, with that goal?
100%. But Dave, don't give these two the first half and let me talk about the second half, mate. Come on. Let's talk about the second half. What did you think? Let's start on a positive, Dave. Steve Davis, for me, had nothing to lose in that game. You know, on the back of the win against, obviously, a very poor Forest side. You know, he knows these young players better than anyone. Joe Hodge, Campbell, Bueno. This is why they're getting opportunities. For me, Bueno was unplayable that first half. I mean, what a full debut. Incredible. Yeah. To get an
assist,
what a
great cross as well. That's the sort of cross we've been screaming out for the goal.
Yeah, for probably 2 years. And, you know, Traore hasn't put a ball like that in his career at Wolves yet. Bueno, his first cross I've seen him do, straight to Traore's head. And, you know, and I think it was also encouraging to see the midfield driving forward as well. And he just looked so more open, so more fluid. And you know what? I'll stick my neck out and say that's the best first half that we've had this season.
I think you're right.
I agree, Jace. I really do. Yeah.
And now, Dave, as you've requested, I'll talk about the second half. and yeah, listen, we did get hit by a sucker punch in the 46th minute. Now, the best time for a team to score is obviously just before half-time or just after. And listen, Palace come out the blocks quicker than we did, and it's a goal. Back to the first half, though. Neves hits the post on the free kick, scores that. It's a different game. It's 2-0.
It was an absolute peach of a free kick. If it had been a couple of inches the other way, it would have gone in.
Yeah. And then realistically, Dave, yes, there's still 45 minutes to play, but it's as good as game over, really. They've got to score three to beat us. They come out the block second half, and we I wouldn't say we capitulated, but we wasn't the first half side. And we all know what happened in the end. Just so disappointing because, like, you know, Jack and Manny were saying, I was expecting back-to-back wins. You know, we'd scored in the first half from open play. It was all exciting. And then, Listen, you can't blame Steve Davis at all for that. He explained his substitutes after as well. Yeah. So, on to Sunday.
Yeah, what did you make of the second half then, Manny? I mean, obviously, half-time...
You know what? The crucial bit for me was that Neves free kick. We haven't been two goals clear in a match since February. It's nine months.
February 2019, Manny.
Yeah, February 2019. That's 9 months. Women have babies in 9 months, and we haven't been two goals clear, you know. And it that cushion is really, really important. So that free kick, it was a bit of bad luck, and it was a good free kick. We were on top at that time. We were playing well. Yeah. Costa had a chance where maybe, you know, if he'd been playing regular football, he would have probably took that first time. He tried to take a couple of touches and then toe poke it, and that was close as well. Literally, Palace, I think, had that shot from, you know, long distance at the post themselves. But after that, I thought Wolves played really well, led by the fullbacks, Smedo and Bueno. Both of them, first half, were just rampant. You know, Zaha didn't get a kick, and Bueno was playing one-twos. He was tackling back. He literally blocked every cross that came in as well. So it was defensive as well as attacking. And so the second half, they've come out, and we're all, honestly, the way fans are really positive and everybody's up. And you can see that we're saying to the team, concentrate, just concentrate, 10 minutes, just concentrate, you know, literally 50 seconds later, out of nowhere, you know, the ball comes on. And this, Eze is a good player, but I don't think he's a far post, you know, heading merchant. And he's completely on his own, isn't he? He's completely got the freedom of Selhurst Park. And that does change a game. And for 10 minutes, you're just trying to get a bit of control. Now, the substitutions, obviously, as fans at the ground, we ain't got replays or TV, and we haven't seen any of the interviews. And I didn't see any of that Steve Davis reaction till this morning. So when that happened, it was like a complete shocker. There was a gasp from the away crowd that three quite important players, two who had played really well, had all been hauled off at the same time. Now, he's explained the injuries, but they didn't all get injured at that moment. So could he have staggered it? Could he have kept one on? Could he have kept Adama on for another 10 minutes and got the other two early? I just think, you know, Crystal Palace don't see, oh, these three are injured, that's why he's taking them off. Crystal Palace, Tyrick Mitchell was punching the air because Adama Traore was going off because he was having an absolute nightmare. The guy was being roasted every time Adama got the ball. They panic, and you know, to see him go off was a big relief. And I just think, you know, Boubacar Traore committed fouls, but he put his foot in. He was pressing so hard in that midfield, something that we don't do. You know, he was running for everything. And yeah, okay, he might be fatigued, he might not, I don't know, but it just seems strange doing all three at the same time. It took the impetus away, and then we did come back, to be fair. I think, you know, personally, when Juan came on, I really thought he held the ball up really well. There was three or four occasions he held the ball up and he laid it up. Costa struggled to hold the ball up. Every time the ball went up to Costa,
I think he faded, didn't he, Costa?
Yeah, he did fade, but even the first half, he struggled to really, you know, they did bully him a little bit, and which is unlike Costa, but it's, again, it's fitness, it's not having played football at that level for so long, it's going to happen. Where Hwang did actually, you know, bring the other players in, and we weren't that far away from maybe nicking a goal at the end, but, you know, it was just so frustrating after playing so well in the first half, and just, you know, but I think we can take positives. Last year, we played Palace away. We got absolutely hammered 2-0. We didn't lay a glove on them. We hardly had a shot. So if you compare it from last year to this year, we went ahead. We had a similar number of shots. We had similar possession, similar passing to a very, very strong Palace side, you know, especially going forward. So, you know.
And Palace have come from one goal behind at home. That's the third time they've done it this season as well.
And we've literally, you know, every time we've gone ahead, struggled to hang on. Newcastle, Leeds, now Palace, you know, we've gone ahead in all three games. And we've picked up 1 point from, you know, winning position. So that's a concern. That second goal is a huge concern. Five goals in 11 games is still rubbish, you know. I know people have a go at Semedo. To be honest, I didn't see, again, the angle from where we are as away fans. You can't see everything. And I didn't see Semedo making the mistakes that you see on TV afterwards, especially him running back.
The second goal.
Because the thing is, the first half...
I thought my TV had paused.
Jace, you know, the first half, he was literally, you know, he ruled Zaha. He played brilliantly. He was almost like our best player on the pitch with Bueno. And to see that second half was just, you know, what is it? Is it a lack of desire? Is it a lack of just switching off? Is it mental thing? You know, because he's got the ability. He's got the pace. I don't know. Why does he do that, guys? I don't know.
Well, listen, you can't. Against any opposition in the Premier League, you switch off and you're going to get punished. And Semedo showed that yesterday. And he wasn't fault, especially for the second goal, in my opinion. And that's obviously
massively a goal that cost us the game.
But the other thing we haven't mentioned is that chance that Costa had early on. Now, two or three years ago, he'd have had that for breakfast. Yes, it may have got caught under his feet. Why he didn't pull the trigger straight away, I don't know. But he seemed to almost try and put it onto his weaker foot, unless it did get caught under his feet. But why he just didn't shoot? If he'd have shot then,
Don't you think that's been a lot of the players, you can say that, they want to make an extra touch.
Yeah.
Shooting first.
Absolutely. He's trying to walk into the net, perhaps. But I think if he'd have hit that first time, it's a goal for me.
Yeah.
What did you think? I mean, I know it was ruled out for offside, but I was literally going nuts when we had a brilliant move. Was it Bueno again that knocked the ball across? And then I think it was Collins that was a yard out and managed.
Guedes was offside.
But like again, I think the offside saved him because he was a yard out and he missed.
I think in Costa's defence, because he hasn't still got that match fitness, he's trying to give himself a yard, but he was a couple of yards off. I mean, you know, it was evident. But listen, one of them decisions will go our way eventually. But the encouraging thing is, look at his movement. You know, yes, it's not happening every few minutes, but he's getting into some good positions and, you know, he will get goals this season, not as many as we expect. But I think his movement's very good and something we've definitely been missing.
Well, we're going to come on to talk about Diego and the impact he's made, not just on the field, but in the dressing room in a little bit. One other incident that I want to just cover before we get on to the managerial situation, and I'll go with Jack first, is the penalty appeal. Your honest opinions, do you think it was or not?
Right, this is what I think. I don't think that's a penalty, but given the one we were given on Saturday, they have to give it because I can't honestly see too much of a difference between the two. Yeah, it's with VAR these days, you've kind of got to judge it as black and white because that's what VAR has made things. It's no longer subjective. You can't look at an incident and go, well, common sense says he's probably not trying to do it deliberately, so we'll let him get off with it. VAR now says if your arm is in an unnatural position, and you're making yourself bigger and the ball hits it, it's a penalty. And I think that fits the criteria. Just like the one on Saturday when the Toffolo from Forest did it and we got the penalty. So I can't quite work out why they gave the one on Saturday but not the one yesterday. That would be my only sort of thing. I personally don't think either of them are penalties, but if you're giving one, you've got to give both.
Well, I would say, and I'll come on to see Jason and Manny's opinion on this in a second, the one at the weekend was 100% penalty because his hand was out and the ball was on target and it didn't come off anything else. And the one yesterday, I'm guessing they argued it hit his knee, then his arm and stuff like that. They were kind of like, whereas the other one, it was just, it was a shot that was going towards the bottom corner and it hit his hand. So that's why I think there's a difference. Jason, your thoughts on it?
Yeah, for me, I'll say it wasn't a penalty. I mean, obviously, Manny didn't have the comfort of watching it on the replays that we did. And yes, his arm wasn't in a natural position, but it seemed to hit his leg and deflect slightly. I might be wrong. That's just my interpretation and an opinion on it. But listen, with the beauty of VAR, the ref should be getting it right every time. But I'm not about this decision. Obviously,
you know, the only thing I have to say is, like, obviously, when it happened so quickly and we didn't know. We all sort of appealed because everyone sort of did. But then, if you know the top tier at Palace, they have TV screens because I can't see the pitch. So they've got TV screens. And they all started, there was a big commotion going up because they were watching the replays. And when I see it, you know, I remember Kilman against Leicester. I remember that one where he stuck his arm out when he was running back and he just had his arm out, his arm. Now, either it's the rule or it's not. You know, the handball rule is being turned into a complete farce, let's be honest. Every year, there's a slightly different interpretation. Now, if they say that if you make your body silhouette bigger by sticking your arms out and it stops the ball from progressing, it's a penalty, then it's a penalty. Because that's what, if that's the rule they've made, personally, I don't think it's a penalty. If it was my rules, it was just, you know, it was a bit of a deflection onto his arm, but his arm was there. And if his arm was by his side, or you see a lot of players, they put their arms around the back, don't they, to avoid it. So they're purposely showing everybody that, look, my arms are out the way. His wasn't. So because it wasn't, you can't say 1 week, let's give it. And the next week, I don't think that is, you know. So at the end of the day, that ball was going across. And if it had missed his arm, it might have gone to an attacker, so it still stops potentially a goal scoring opportunity. So, you know, when I did watch it, I did think, you know, that's something like pretty certain that it will be given later on in the season. That's the inconsistency. And like Jason says, it should be now. There should be no excuse. They've got the technology. They've got to decide yes or no. They can't say, yeah, well, that one is and that one isn't. They've got to be a definite line, and we don't know as fans, let's be honest, you know, if it's the defense and the attacker, it's different rules, isn't it, depending on whether it's deliberate or not as well, which is complete farce, isn't it?
I think we probably all agree that probably would have been a soft penalty we given, but like as you say, by the letter of the law, where's the consistency?
There's not a consistency.
I think just to jump in there, I think what we should be more aggrieved about was that Joel Ward didn't get the second yellow when he followed through on Jose Sarr right at the start of the second half. I think if he hadn't been booked already, I think that's a stonewall yellow card. And it's one of them, isn't it, where you're kind of thinking, you know, it's a yellow card, so why is the referee not giving him the second yellow card? Especially when, you know, Boubacar got booked for a minor trip, didn't he? I know he said it was an accumulation, but it's kind of one of them, isn't it? I think, again, it's ifs, buts and maybes, but if they go down to 10 men with 40 minutes to play, I think it falls in our favour, doesn't it? So I think that's probably one to be more disappointed about.
Justin Rose agreeing with you there, a definite red. So look, that's the game. Obviously, we'll come on and look forward to the Leicester game and how Steve Davis is doing in a little while. But a lot of people really are interested in hearing our thoughts on the managerial situation. Obviously, we talked about this before Bruno got sacked. They'll have a plan. It'll be sorted. Someone ready to go. Well, we're like 2.5 weeks into this pretty much. And we still haven't got the manager sorted. Lopetegui's out the window. We've had, you know, Martins that's come in with the sporting manager. And Nuno was the toast of the town last Thursday or Friday. We've also been
with it. Jeff chucking that one out on social media for us.
Yeah, we got Peter Boss as well, who's in the frame. And, of course, we got this Michael Beale. Now, Jason, I know that you're a big advocate to bring in Nuno back. And obviously
Not anymore. Change from
not anymore. Game.
Where are
not
you
anymore.
At now? What's she thinking?
Listen, like probably most people, did I really know much about Michael Beale? No, of course I didn't. I've done a bit of research myself. And you know what? I like what I see. I've maintained from the start that we need a manager. on the uppers, on an upward trajectory. And I think Michael Beale is that. Yes, they might be fourth at the minute or sixth in the championship. But actually, somebody sent me an infographic today. I don't want to DM me on Twitter. I don't want to share too much information. But they went to a webinar that he put on, and it's really interesting. Some of the things, like I mentioned a couple of things, that he wants to identify a clear style of play focused on players being able to show their unique qualities, flexibility to be unpredictable against opponents, a winning team, adapt to change in game as well. But it was a lot more in depth than that. But this is a guy who studied football. He was never a professional, but he has studied and studied and studied football. And for me, I think, I didn't know much about him. I've listened to him speak. I've watched a few YouTube videos. And you know what? I'm quietly impressed at the minute. He's actually brought a video out today as well, pretty much resigning from QPR. I don't know if you've seen it. It's in Twitter account, South London Press or South something Press. And it is basically saying, oh, you know, take each day as it comes. Yes, I've made no, you know, lie that I want to manage in the Premier League one day. So he's pretty much saying to Wolves, come and get me. Clearly, they've already had some sort of dialogue. So I'm quietly confident that this is the man. The only thing I'm disappointed about, if we've had to wait for the guy, that's great. But the fact that Bruno Lage needed to go, but as I said the other night, they didn't have any plan in place whatsoever. And they've muddled their way through it. It's looked pretty unprofessional, you know, from Wolves fans looking in. But if they get this Michael Beale, I think it's going to be a shrewd appointment. And I'll certainly be behind him.
Well, then, looking at the Twitter poll that I ran on Always Wolves about this, you can see that 71% of Wolves fans, and there's over 200 that have voted on that, are a big yes. There's 19 on the percent. There's only 10% that are dead set against him, which surprised me, which is quite interesting. So I think a bit like what you're saying, Jason, the more people look into him, the more people are coming around to thinking this could be a shrewd appointment, Manny.
I was just going to say, sorry to jump in, Manny.
Go on, carry on.
People are probably looking at, oh, it's a championship manager. I've never heard of him. Oh, he's never played professionally. And I get that. They're the objections to it. But I think there's so many more positives to what he can bring after watching him and doing my own little bit of research. There's people out there researching him far more than me, and some very credible people are giving him, you know, giving him some real plaudits. So, I think he's definitely going to be a shrewd appointment.
Yeah, you know what Jason says, Dave, you know, the most important thing is rather than us just say, oh, who's Michael Beale, actually use your noggin and Google and research and read, and you'll find some information and then make a judgment. This guy at 20, the age of 20, he said when he was 20, by 40, I'm going to be a manager. He was driven. He's been described by one of his QPR squad members as a genius of football. You know, you look at Emi Martinez, the goalkeeper, Villa. He regarded Michael Beale not as a coach. He was our second manager. Gerrard and him were the managers. You look at what Gerrard says about him. No top-line manager talks about their coach like Gerrard talks about this Beale, and he's basically putting everything that we put on the pitch is down to Beale. I'm there as the manager, I pick the side, but this guy, I'm light years behind him on, you know, methods, plans. He uses a system where he divides the pitch into three zones, the top 36 yards, the middle, and the back, and he believes in winning the ball in the middle 36 and then attacking. He's got, you know, obviously attacking philosophy. He wants to empower each individual with exactly what they need to do and exactly what they need to do to improve themselves. And he makes players really clear. You look at responses from the players he's dealt with, all of them say, you know, we all sing off the same hymn sheet. We all know what we're doing. We all know what he wants. So he's almost like a philosopher of football at a very young age. He's not someone who's played the game at 30-odd and retired and thought, I'll take up manager. He's actually, you know, at the age of 20, decided that he wanted to be a coach. He wanted to coach kids. He wanted to then progress into top-line sort of assistant manager roles, which he got at Rangers. You know, it's not a small club. And you look at the Rangers and the Villa fans. Villa fans on Twitter today are saying, oh my God, he was the start of our downfall, losing him. You know, when he went, that was the brains. He was called Brains, wasn't he, at Villa, I think. And so, you know, that's what you've got to research. So he's been to Sao Paulo. Just think about it. A young English coach had the balls to go to Sao Paulo in Brazil, and he had one defeat in 20 games. One defeat in 20 games, and then they sold 9 players, and, you know, it went a bit south after that. But he came back, and he still got a top job. He was in the academy at Chelsea and Liverpool. You don't leave Chelsea to go to Liverpool if you're rubbish. Even an academy job, Liverpool can employ whoever they want. So let's not just think, who's Michael Beale? Let's do a bit of research. Let's see the progression of previous coaches. Mikel Arteta, I mentioned, was only ever a coach, was never a manager. He decides to take his first managerial job in his top of the league, you know, given a bit of time because he studied the game. You look at Graham Potter's progression. The guy was just in the Norwegian league. If we'd have picked a coach up from the Norwegian league, are we going to suddenly say, oh, he's rubbish?
Graham Potter's doing. We did, Solbakken.
Yeah, we did. Shut up, guys.
Good example, Manny.
You know what? Having said all this, obviously he's a gamble. Obviously he's a risk. But I think Wolves are in a position where almost any manager that we employ will have a huge element of risk or gamble attached to it. But we're not going to get the Pochettinos or Tuchels. We're going to prize Pep Guardiola off out of Man City just yet. You know, so everyone below that level is always going to be a bit of a risk. But you know what? He seems really driven. He seems really ambitious. And every time he talks, I've listened to 3 or 4 interviews. There's also, if you go on coachesvoice.com, you can see his own words. So in his own words, he's mapped out his whole career. So it's almost like at 20, he had this vision of where he wanted to be and where he wanted to coach and what philosophy. And that's quite a brave thing for him to do. And I'll back him fully. He's a British, English coach that's got a lot of experience at a very young age. And I think we should be excited about an appointment like that and not think, oh, well, he's not a fashionable name.
And he speaks Portuguese.
Yeah. Jack. Fluently.
Jack, moving on to your views. Man, I mean, that was really, really interesting what you've had to say. And I think, Manny, that's quite educational for everyone that's watching or listening to this podcast. You've obviously done your research, looked into it. I've done the same. Jason's done the same. When you look at everything, Jack, let's hear your views on this because, you know, you're always the voice of reason.
Try to. Yes. No, I agree completely with what Manny and Jason have said. I think if we're going to take a punt, and let's be fair, it is a punt. You know, I think the comparison to Graham Potter is very interesting because I think relative to budget and expectation, I think Graham Potter's probably been the success story in terms of Premier League managers in the last 2, 3, 4 years. Mm. You know, so if we've got the next Graham Potter, then that's going to be fantastic for us, isn't it? And that's probably what we're doing. I think we're not going to get a Guardiola, a Klopp, a Tuchel.
It's going to have to be a Potter.
It's going to have to be a Potter, isn't it? And it's going to have to be someone that we can mould and almost be a stepping stone, yeah. But someone that can come in, stamp his authority, show himself off, what a great coach I am. Look what I'm going to do with this group of players. I'm going to get them way above where they should be. And then I'm going to go off and do something else. And I think that's kind of what we need to do because that's our player recruitment model, isn't it? We sign a player for £15 million, put him in the Premier League. He's brilliant and we sell him for 30. And that's kind of what we're going to have to do with the manager. We're going to have to get this guy from the Championship who's so well regarded. I mean, I've not read anything negative about him. None of his former players, former coaches, former, you know, people who've worked with him have all said the same things. He's great, very driven, ambitious, deep thinker on the game, very good tactically, good man manager as well, which I think is going to be
very
really
important. Very important. Yeah.
You know, because they do look like a team without direction and without leadership at the minute. So someone who can come in and bring that is going to be absolutely massive for us. So, yes, I think he's going to be, if it is Michael Beale, and it looks like it is, I think it's a very shrewd appointment. Yeah, it's a punt because, you know, people are saying he's not done a lot as a head coach, but he's done so much more as a coach, hasn't he? You know, I think you talk about, oh, he's only had 15 games as a manager or a head coach, whatever you want to use. but he's been coaching for 20-odd years. I mean, he started in futsal, didn't he? So he's going to bloody love Max Kilman. So,
you know, that'll be the commentator's thing, won't it?
Oh,
know,
yeah.
Michael Peel, who's
Max
also...
Did Max Kilman play futsal?
So did Max Kilman's new manager, Jason. Did you know
no,
that?
I didn't know that.
I'll tell you what, my boss at work is a Villa fan, and we were out together yesterday on appointments and stuff like that. We were talking, funnily enough, obviously about the Wolves and the Villa, and we were talking about Beal, and he said straight out, like what you said, Manny, you spoke to a few Villa fans. It all started going wrong for Gerrard when he left. I think it's called Rangers Noise, big Rangers news channel that they've done a thing, and they're all very big on Beal, and they want him to come back to be their manager as well, because he's so highly regarded, again, for the coaching and the brains, like what you said when he was at Rangers, under Gerrard's Rangers. Yeah. Yeah. So everything I'm hearing, and there's a lot of people that have been on the channel, and we've talked about it, going on and harping about, why do we always go with Portuguese or whatever? Why can't we get an English manager? I'm like, who? Well, this is the who, isn't it? If we're going to go down that route, then it's... And looking at the polls and stuff, the majority of the Wolves fans are quite warming the more they look into it, that he could be the man. And from all the reports that we're seeing, he could be at Molineux for the Leicester game, whether or not you'd be managing or watching it, but it's looking like they're looking at pushing this through, doesn't it?
Go on, Jase.
Well, the other danger is now that they've alerted other clubs to him, and there's going to be managers that, you know, maybe West Ham or the Villa job coming up. He could be a prime candidate, so I think we've got to move really, really quickly.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. You know, it's again a little bit undercover. I mean, Fossen, for all their criticisms, they do a lot of stuff behind the scenes as well, don't they? A lot of player signings have happened that way, where nobody's got a clue, and then suddenly we sign someone. So maybe, you know, maybe they've just been working on this guy as the backup to not getting Lopetegui. You know, and it's not just... I'm pretty sure it's not just popped up. You know, oh, who's he? He is regarded and he is known. And, you know, the Nuno was probably just a bit of a smokescreen to keep us occupied while they were working on it. You know, it's not easy to... I mean, he probably thinks he's got time on his side to get into the Premier League and take his pick of a decent club if he does well at QPR. So there might be a bit of him that thinks, oh, I want to finish this project with QPR yet. You know, I've still got something to give here. But then again, these opportunities don't come all the time. You know, if he has three or four defeats at QPR because he hasn't got the squad he wants and things go wrong, then it's a long time, isn't it? A match or two, a month of poor results in football, then suddenly your stock goes down. So I'm pretty sure if Wolves really want him and they really push out for him, they'll get him. And, and then us as fans, hopefully, looking at the polls and looking at, you know, some of the more learned opinions of fans, it seems like people will be willing to give him a real good crack at doing a good job.
Yeah, well, Gray Adams has said some people writing Beal off prematurely doesn't seem to be more of a gamble than anyone else. I think that's a fair comment. If you're watching the chat, we've got well over 180 watching live at the moment. Just put a yes or a no in the chat, so we got us guys watching can sort of see where you're thinking and what the vox pop is. I also hear that there's a buyout clause in his contract as well. Or there's a clause in his contract that if Wolves meet that, he can go. Some of the journalists have been reporting that. But I think most of us on here, from what we're saying, it's like if it was to be him, you know, then I think the fan base will probably get behind him, and he looks like they're leaning towards that.
I don't think there's, like, if you think about it, who else is there? So we have to ask ourselves, who else is there? And all the ones we've been linked with, apart from Lopetegui, the Pedro Martins or the boss, or they've all sort of failed a little bit at their clubs recently. Yeah. They've all failed a little bit. They've all got a bit of baggage. Now, this guy is clean. He hasn't got baggage. He's just started. He's ambitious. Like Jack said, literally, I was scouring the internet for somebody to say something negative about him, because you will always find someone saying something negative, and you cannot find anybody to say, actually, he was a bit of a control freak, or he didn't get on with so-and-so player, or so-and-so fell out with him, or he didn't have a plan B. There's pretty much nothing out there that suggests that there's... Obviously, he's very young in his career as a manager, but even when he was a coach, there's nothing out there apart from praise. There's also links of him, you know, being close with Ancelotti and Mourinho when he was academy coach, learning off those guys. So he's been around these big top clubs. He would have got a lot of information, and he seems really ambitious and really confident, you know. And that's what I like. He's like a really straight kind of talking guy, and he knows what he wants. And I think we should, you know, look forward to it if we do appoint him.
And of course, this story will run and roll over the next 48 hours to 24, 48 hours to 72 hours in the build up to the Leicester game. I'm sure we'll hear a lot more on this. I think Wolves are waiting probably to make an official approach until after the QPR game tonight, which I believe they're winning. And Ray, who's watching on Facebook, says QPR are currently top of the league. Well, so yeah. There you go. Let's talk about our interim manager and managers, Steve Davies, and what's the other chap's name? Yeah, how do you think they've done? I mean, they've took the team for three games. We'll kick off with you first on this one, Jason.
Yeah, I think they've done well. They haven't really got anything to lose. It's a bit of a romantic story, isn't it? Steve Davies, you know, getting a chance to manage his boyhood club, and I'm really pleased for him, because listen, we'd all give limbs to be in that position. Obviously, he's worked for it all his life. He's also an accomplished manager as well. And I just think it's important that whoever comes in, yes, they're going to bring their own backroom team in, but I think these guys are still integral to obviously the under-23s and under-18s, which is where they'll be moving back to. But also that link to the first team as well, because I think they've, I think that what's been different for me is, you know, the on the pitch, players have just, I don't know, we've almost opened up a little bit. We've, you know, took the handbrake off, as I said last night. And I just think that you know, the job they've done in the last three games for me, yes, the results haven't been there, but it was tough. You know, they've had to pick us up by the scruff of our neck. You know, fair play to Steve Davies and James Collins, because I think they've done a good job. And it was nice to see Moutinho on the bench the other day, geeing the players along. That was brilliant, you know, and that gave us all a buzz. And that's what I mean. It's just seems so different. I think Lage was, well, holding us back, you know, yeah, on the pitch massively. And yeah, they just had the chance to express themselves.
Jack, your thoughts on obviously Steve Davies?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it was always going to be difficult. And I think in a short period of time, it's difficult to make a massive impact. But I think what's been really good is that the players seem to be enjoying their football again a little bit more. You know, I think sometimes watching Wolves in the last 12 months has been difficult for us as supporters. So you think the players must also be feeling, well, this football isn't working, this is boring to play, this isn't exciting us as players. Whereas I think it's not been amazing under Davies and Collins, but there's been a little bit more spark, a little bit more creativity, and a little bit more effort and passion and commitment. And I think that's obviously what they're going to probably take from it, isn't it, really? That they've actually got a tune out of these players where Bruno Lage was clearly struggling. I mean, I think when you watch sort of the under-21s and the under-18s, you can kind of see that coming through with their coaching. They're very expressive. They like players to make mistakes because that's how they learn. And I think that's really important, that sometimes in football we forget that actually a lot of players are still developing, still growing as players, and they're going to make mistakes. You know, we've pulled players apart tonight, haven't we, about mistakes they've made. But as long as they learn from it, then they're going to be fine and they're going to be better for it. So I think having those voices in and around the squad, even if they are sort of not demoted but moved back down to academy roles, I think it's going to be really important. We have got a fairly young squad. I mean, I think the average age of the back four yesterday was 22.
Yeah.
Which is crazy for the Premier League, really.
Yeah.
It is. And I think he's carried himself where they all have, with a lot of dignity, and how he talks as well, Manu.
Yeah, yeah, brilliant. You know, the one thing he's done, he's revealed to us that we've got a decent academy. You know, yeah, got Campbell, Bueno, and Hodge. Now coming to the Premier League, this is like the toughest league in the world. He's introduced them, and they've all offered something, and pretty much we've been struggling for players to come through the system. Even Man City, even Liverpool with Carvalho and Elliot and people like that, they still bring academy players through. So that's really encouraging. So I hope they are retained as part of the setup. I'm a little bit thinking, you know, Rob Edwards was interviewed or allegedly had an interview about some sort of role. Maybe that's their new approach, that, you know, the Beale, Edwards, Collins, Campbell, like an English, young, hungry managers, you know, and who know the culture of the football here, who know the, you know, how important it is to the fans. If you saw the bench when Large was in charge, literally he was on the touchline in his technical area, and you literally never saw any other person alongside him. And Tony Roberts sometimes joined him, but there didn't seem that much activity behind him. Even in the Nuno days, you had a lot with his backroom staff. They would all be hugging at each goal, probably because Large didn't see any goals. That's why probably he didn't do that. But, you know, we saw that suddenly Jones under Davis and Campbell's and Moutinho, and we saw that, you know, a little bit of action on the touchline, which brings the fans on side. So, you know, I hope we do, because these players, what I liked about his biggest decision so far was when Ait Nouri gets injured, it was almost like he wants a left-sided player to play at left-back. So he picked Bueno. He didn't pick the right-hand-sided player to play at left-back, which Large would do. So he wants a winger. I'm playing Traore. I want a striker, Costa. I need someone to break everything up in midfield. I'm playing Boubacar Traore. So he's almost like a proper coach picking the right player in the right position. And you know, that's really, really good to see. I hope they play a part. I don't know if Beale's got his own coaching staff, but he's new, isn't he? He's new. This is his first managerial job. He probably hasn't bedded down his own little backroom team. So hopefully they've all got a part to play.
They have. And Jason, Manny brings us on to a obviously subject that you wanted to talk about. Very well done, by the way, and that's the young players, because you wanted to call a couple of points on that, didn't you?
Yeah, just I think Davis and Collins linked with the young players. It was just nice to see them get the opportunity. I didn't know much about Bueno and Hodge, Bueno, however you pronounce it. I didn't know much about these guys, and you know what? They look like really good players. They do, and they've adapted well. They've adapted quickly. They're still, as Jack said, they've got a lot to learn. They're going to make mistakes. But to be chucked in a game like last night, Bueno, and to do the assist he did, just shows how much confidence he's got. And that confidence doesn't just come from the player within. It comes from the management structure giving them that confidence. And you know what? It is so important. How many foreign players have we signed on a bit of a whim? You know, didn't really know who there was, paid millions for and haven't really produced, and yet we've got a player like Bueno who, if we'd have signed him for 20 million, he'd have put that performance in yesterday. Nobody would have batted an eyelid. Nobody. That it, you know, what a signing. So I think we've got to give the young players a chance, and I think Michael Beale will be someone to do that, because he does believe in youth and young players as well. So I think it could be a fantastic mix.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And Chem Campbell's just signed a new long-term contract as well.
Yeah, and fantastic. Yeah. You know, and he played, I can't remember the game.
West Ham. He came on.
And he come on without fear, beat two or three players on the byline. Do you know what? That's what we want. The more experienced players, sometimes, like Costa last night, hesitated a little bit on his chance. Probably thought about it too much. Chem Campbell, nothing to lose. Just goes and beats two or three players, gets the fans up off the seat. That's what we want to see. So it's good that they've been given this chance.
We do want that. And what we're looking for as well with the new manager, you've said about the man management is so important and being able to get a connection with the fans again and also being able to get us off our seats. And hopefully that will come. Jack, how impressed have you been with the likes of Chem Campbell, Bueno, Joseph Hodge, all of those type of players that are, you know, are starting to make their appearances, full debuts for the team as well, coming on and being part of that bigger squad that they're getting experience?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's kind of, there's been a lot of investment into the academy in the last, since Fosun came in, really. And I think we're starting to sort of see the rewards of that. I mean, I think what really helps and what we do differently to a lot of clubs at academy level is we really blood them young. I mean, last year when we were playing under 23 football, we got promoted with a team at average age of 18. And in fact, the under 18.
You watch a lot of under 23 youth football, don't you, as the Wolves? You go to a lot of games.
Yeah, I mean, at one point last year, towards the end of the season, the under 18s were mainly 15 and 16 year olds because the 17 and 18 year olds have been pushed up to 23s football. And I think that's a really good way to do it because that gives them just that really early indication of this guy's going to be good. I mean, you watched the under-18s last year get to the FA Youth Cup semi-final and you're seeing guys like Lemba Kisa, Ollie Tipton, Harvey Griffiths was in there, Tyler Roberts, Nathan Fraser. Fantastic players. And now this year they've stepped up to 21s football and they're doing really well again. And it won't be long until those guys are being blooded into the first team, whether it's travelling with the squad, being on the bench, you know, maybe getting 5 minutes at the end of a cup game, that kind of thing. But there's a real sort of progression there, and you can kind of see that with players. They're thinking, well, you know, that guy, he was in my position 2 years ago, and now he's starting games for the first team. Now he's coming on in three games in a row for the first team. That could be me. And I think that's kind of really going to help them long term. And I think the likes of Chem Campbell, who, you know, for me is a real talent. I've questioned his attitude in the past with the 23s. He's got a real streak in him for getting sent off and, you know, petulance, but he's really knuckled down in the last 12 months. And he's become a real key player for that 23 group. Hugo Bueno, similar, has kind of outgrown it almost. Luke Kundal did the same last year. He was obviously far too good for 23's football. So he's gone out on loan. And it's that kind of thing. There's that real almost conveyor belt where players are kind of, they judge them far earlier. We're not keeping players till they're 22, 23 and then going, actually, we're not sure. So we're going to let you go. It's kind of like, you're 19 years old. We think you're good enough. We're going to back you 100%. We're going to either get you out on loan to play this football like Taylor Perry's done, or you're going to be part of this first team group travelling every week with the squad. And I think that really, really helps them because they're given the right sort of guidance from the very start, really.
And you have to give credit where credit's due because Fosun do come under some criticism and they have invested a lot in the academy and the facilities and all of that. And like you say, it's starting to bear fruit. Some final thoughts before we go on to the next subject, Manny, on the young players.
You know what? Well, I was just thinking about reading some of Beale stuff earlier, and this QPR player was talking about how he'd worked all his life with young players, under sevens, under nines, under 12s, under 15s. So when he came into the QPR setup, they had a lot of young players, and it was so natural for him to work with young players. So, you know, that our squad is actually, you know, if you look at Kilman and Collins, yes, they make mistakes because they're not still experienced, you know, top line professionals. They'll get there. They've got all the attributes, and to have a manager that's experienced in working with young players and encouraging, and he becomes like your mate, and he finds what makes you tick. If he develops a plan for each individual player, and he gets them to focus on themselves to contribute. And I just think it'll be a positive. And it's great to see them through. Like Jason said, if we had Eight Nuri and Johnny injured and we had no left back and we were allowed to sign someone on an emergency, we'd have to go and spend 15-20 million on getting somebody of Bueno's performance last night, you know, and they might not have produced the quality they produced. We spent 30 odd million on Guedes and, you know, 40 odd million on, there's 80 million we've spent on a couple of players. And then we've got Hodge and, you know, Hodge and Bueno coming in, who have like really impressed us. So it's really, really important, you know, that we can't, just because they're academy players, we've actually got to think about what their value could be for us as well. So like someone like Luke Cundall came in last year, did really well. So from having Moutinho, Neves and Dendonker in midfield and no options, now we've got Moutinho, Neves, Traore, Hodge, Nunes, and we've loaned Cundall. That's six. We've got six midfielders suddenly.
Conor Ronan's still around this.
Conor Ronan, so we've got seven midfielders suddenly from having three. So, and that's because we've encouraged the youth into the first team setup, blooded them, given them the confidence. And remember, they've come into a team that's playing poorly. They're not come into a team that's at the top of the league and it's all going to be hunky-dory for them. They've had to really work hard and they've all produced something. And, long may that continue. There's nothing better for a Wolves fan to see a homegrown talent run on that pitch. It gets the crowd up. We love that. And, and the pressure, like Jay says, the pressure's off those kids because they're fearless. They don't have they ain't got a price tag. You look at Morgan Gibbs-White. He's a decent player, but that 40-odd million quid is going to haunt him for the rest of his life, isn't it? It's not going to... You know, it's never going to go off him now.
Until he got the signing on fee, Manny.
Yeah, well, obviously.
that'll soften the blow a bit.
I'll tell you what as well, which is, I think, it's important. The fact that they've come on and took part and done well. The next time they get the chance, they're in their heads, I've done this before. Mm-hmm. I can do it again. It's, you know, it builds their confidence. Now, the next subject, I don't know who wants to go first on this. So I'll leave it for you three to decide. This is going to be talking. Can we talk about the performance of the manager, the performance of the players? Let's talk just because I think we should. The performance of Jeff Shee and
Manny.
No, I'll go for Jack, the debutant.
Manny's going first.
I'm going for Jack.
Go on then, Jack. Do you fancy it?
Yeah, go on. Yeah, I'll have a go. I think if we start with Scott Sellers, I think the academy is functioning fantastically well, like we've just mentioned. Unfortunately for Scott Sellers, I think that's only part of his job now as sporting director. I think he's also in charge of the medical team, and I think they're underperforming badly. I mean, I'm staggered that they let Nunes carry on last night after he got that bang on the head, because he looked absolutely, he almost looked concussed, didn't he, when he got back up off the grass. And we've had two or three players this year that have played on with injuries, and God knows what that's done to him in terms of long-term in damage, you know. But I've always said with Scott Sellers, because I've met him a few times at 23 games, he comes across a really nice guy. He's obviously very well respected within youth football. If we'd have kept him there and just said, right, you're our academy manager, and this is, you've got to put a 10-year plan into place, I think we'd all be shouting from the rooftops, what a brilliant academy manager we've got, what a great academy mm-hmm. we've got. I do question whether he's been over-promoted, and I think whether he's kind of got the clout and the nous to kind of run a Premier League top half football club, which is what we're trying to be as a sporting director. If you look at the other teams in our position with their sporting directors of football, whatever you want to call it, they've got a lot more experience in that area than what Scott Sellers has got. And I think perhaps I admire the club in a way for promoting within and kind of going, we're going to give this guy an opportunity. But I do think part of perhaps the long-term strategy to kind of establish ourselves in that top half is we need someone at board level who understands that kind of role a little bit better than what Scott does. Like I say, I think you can't knock him for what he's done with the academy, but that's only a small part of his job, really. Obviously, recruitment has been up and down, hasn't it, in the last couple of years. I mean, we all kind of agree that we had a really good transfer window this summer in terms of Nunes, Guedes, Collins, and all those guys coming in. But before that, it was kind of very much, you know, open for debate, wasn't it, whether we were stronger after concluding our business.
What are your thoughts on Jeff Shee then, before we go on to talk to Manny about and Jason Gillan?
Again, I think with Jeff Shee, it's kind of how you judge him. Has he been successful at Wolves? I think overall, probably yes, because he took over as executive chairman when we were a mid-table championship team, and we're now 5th year into the Premier League. So purely on that basis, you'd say, well, he must have done something right in those 5 years to have got us to where we are. But again, whether he's kind of got the long-term strategy and plan, I mean, you see with the, this search for the new manager, there's clearly not been a cohesive strategy in place.
Yeah.
It was very much kind of like, let's go for Lopetegui. And if he turns us down, then we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But that's not good enough for a Premier League club. You've got to have something in place if your number one target turns you down. Or, for example, with the injuries we've had, you know, if a player gets injured, what's your strategy? You're going to bring someone in, you're going to bring someone up through the youth team. That's been very scattergun at times, hasn't it? You know, so I do wonder whether, you know, to fully kind of progress as a club, we're going to need stronger leadership at the top. I do kind of question that at the minute.
You make some good points. Manny, do you want to come in on to on the back of Jack's points there with your
views?
You
know what? Sometimes it's like so easy, obviously, to criticise the hierarchy because a lot of time we don't hear anything. So you just build up your own opinion in your head and then you go with it. I know Wolves did the Ask Wolves and they were brilliant and we had an opportunity to ask our questions. But, you know, in the days of Dalrymple and Kevin Thelwell, I just thought we had more regular information, more regular interaction with fans of the club, whether it was through groups or through, you know, social media. And now that is missing. Now, Jeff Shee seems like a very quiet, almost like a lonely man. I'm sure he walks the corridors of Molineux on his own and nobody walks with sits in the canteen on his own with his own.
We know he goes to the games on his own because
we saw him yesterday, Dave. He pulled up in his white car and he was on his own, drove there and like, you know, and I remember we saw him in Huddersfield and he parked in one of those estates. You pay like 15 quid. We parked there and Jeff Shee parked there, Huddersfield away. So he's a very, very sort of private individual, I think, and he doesn't really, unless somebody really asks him in a like the way Johnny Phillips did in that format, he's not really forthcoming. So maybe we're all thinking he hasn't got a progression plan. Maybe he was like, you know, Lopetegui's my first one, but then after that we're not going to go down that route, we're going to, you know, go for someone like Bill. maybe there was, we don't know. They have got the academy right. Sellers, for me, I don't think he should be in that job. I think he's been promoted beyond his capabilities. I agree with Jack. He should have left him in charge of the under-23s or the academy or building that side of the football club, working with Collins and Davis, and bring in a top-quality sporting director. You know, clubs spend, like us, with record fees on players, you know, named players. We're bringing Neves and Nunes and bringing in all these players and Raul and Jota. All, but what about, you know, the staff? Haven't we got to invest in that? Haven't we got to look for the best people to run that side? And I don't think, no disrespect to Scott Zellers, that he's the best person for that job, you know, in that role. And, you know, they've got the managerial appointments by and large wrong in their tenure. You know, let's be honest, Nuno was the one lone success. The rest of them were pretty much failures. So this could be the tipping point. If Bill does come in and does well, fair enough. But if he doesn't, then, you know, people will
ask you're right.
Serious question.
One way or the other, even
Fosun, you know, if they've given 100 million quid and sent it to Jeff and said, go and get us European football again and we're fourth from bottom, and you've just changed managers and we're still there. So, you know, surely they'll put pressure on those individuals as well or change them. So this is a crucial time, you know, and it's not all about esports and all that side. Yeah, I know it generates money and it's great, but it doesn't relate to us, the fans who travel home and away. We just want to see our team perform on the football pitch, score goals and win football matches. And that's the only thing that changes it. She and Sellers become absolutely brilliant because we win football matches. And if we're losing, then, you know, people will point the finger at them as well, quite rightly.
Well, the reason why I bring it, obviously bringing it up, and I think it's a fair point as well that Stu Kale some eggs about the global brand has expanded, all that sort of stuff through the pandemic. Yeah, and yeah, that's good. That's the other side of it, isn't it? You know, that they're working on, which I think is all great, building the brand and it builds in the revenues and building the models, which I think is, you know, has been a success. But on the football side of it, there's been in the last year, there's questions about the Traore going to Barcelona, us paying for him to play there when we could have done it. You've got to ask questions about why we're selling Cody for $4.5 million to Everton at the end of the season. Why has Fabio Silva been allowed to go out on loan for a whole season when we know we've got issues with our striking department? There's no recall option. All of these, to me, are very questionable.
And a lot of important players haven't signed on the dotted line as well. So,
with Silva, Dave, the reason he's gone out on loan to the Belgian league is to get his stock up, because at the minute it's a player who signed for 35 million who scored 4 goals. So yes, his stock is going up. That's why they've extended his contract as well. You know, clearly, because we're going to lose him for a year.
I get that, Jason. I get what you're saying. I agree with all of that, and I think it's
about having a viable replacement in.
We
haven't replaced him exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, I concur with regards to Sheehan Sellers. I mean, there was the jokes going about Jeff Shee, that he was driving the bus, selling the hot dogs, doing everything, wasn't he? Cleaning the changing rooms. And I think, realistically, she and Sellers are probably doing the jobs of about 4 or 5 people.
Absolutely. Now.
And I don't think there's a strong enough link between Jeff Shee and whatever position he purports to be, the chairman. And, you know, a director of football would be a great link. Somebody, a stronger character than Sellers. Listen, I'd imagine there's quite a few yes men around the club. I'd imagine there's quite a few people who don't want to lose the jobs. Quite a few people who feel privileged to be in these positions. And I think if Scott Sellers is overseeing the medical department, which isn't great at the minute, overseeing the academy, now first team, that's too big a job. You know, I'm not going to... Equally, the Wolves fans need a scapegoat on and off the pitch, don't they? And, you know, the scapegoat off the pitch at the minute appears to be Sellers. Dalrymple, on to that point, never got replaced. So Jeff Shee just muddling along. I just think there should be another 2 or 3 people in key positions within the club, within the hierarchy, to assist these guys. And then I think Sellers had better be judged on doing a specific job as opposed to the 3 or 4 he's doing at the minute.
I think that's bang on, isn't it? Because you're only human. You can only be over so many things, and if you've got too much on your plate, mistakes get made. Yeah. And you know, I mean, I've defended quite a lot when I have a lot of people come sometimes go on the channel posting out all this sort of stuff, and I'm like, I have to keep reminding people, look what they've done and where they've got us to. Yeah. Things at the moment are not brilliant on the pitch, and there's questionable decisions, but on the whole, they've got a lot of things right. They have invested in the money, they've backed Bruno, and now they're looking to get the manager in. If they get what Manny said, this manager right, everything goes in the right direction. Yeah. Boom, if it goes wrong, it goes down, doesn't it? Go on, Jason.
I was just going to say, you look at the football we've seen, look at the players who have come into our club, look how the place has transformed. You know, it was 2 7th place finishes, European football. I mean, it's just beyond our wildest dreams. We never thought we was going to get anywhere near there.
Yeah.
But equally, you know, they're not immune to any criticism.
This manager's
been an absolute shambles, hasn't it? You know,
yeah.
We've been linked with everyone. I mean, the Sean Dyche thing, I've still got a bit of a beam up on it, because now he's been linked with West Brom. You know, I just don't get it. Why was he even being considered? You know, or was he? It's just the communication lines have been very, very poor. Yes, they're not going to come out and say targets they're after, you know, and alert other clubs to them. But I just think it's been pretty poor from start to finish, especially when managers then go into the press and the media and start saying, you know, we've rejected the job, or, you know, I just think it's been pretty poor from start to finish. But hopefully it will be a positive finish, and Michael Beale will get the job.
Absolutely.
Can I just say something about the medical department, Dave?
Yes, of course.
I just want to jump in about Dr. Matt Perry, you know, and when he was at the club, you know, when the pandemic hit, I remember him being on like this big call with like doctors from all around the world, and he was a representative from England, you know, how we were going to fight this pandemic. He's got that much respect in the field, you know, and it wasn't a coincidence that our injury record was second to none. Yes, there's probably a bit of luck there, but, you know, our players were fit. They were never really broke down in any of the matches. Never, ever would you ever have Matt Perry, I think, misdiagnose a player and send him back on the field. We had it with Kalajic. We had it with Neto. Both out now, long term. Like Jack said, Nunes, when we were on the side where Nunes got injured, he was on the floor for a long time, and when he gets up, you can see them running concussion tests, and you think, you know, they sent him back on, and you think, you know, how do they make that decision to say yes, you're fit and you can go back on? And Matt Perry never got those decisions really. He didn't really get them wrong, let's be honest. And we lost that, and we changed the whole setup. And we've got a new doctor and not new medical staff. And you've got to ask questions, haven't you? Because we've got a lot of injuries and people 100%. Break down very easily. So, you know, he's probably a big, big miss in that area.
I mean, we talked about that because, the amount of injuries that we seem to be picking up and long-term injuries as well, it starts to become not another one again. Mm-hmm. Well, let's look on something a little bit positive because we've covered that off and we've still got... to come on to the Leicester game, and we've got a few questions at the end. But Manny, we went to see the Wolves women beat the West Birmingham Baggy Birds last week. We should mention the Wolves women and Macca. You actually went in and did a team talk.
Oh man, it was a team talk. I'm not Michael Bloody Beale, trust me. No, what it was, you know, Macca, I've mentioned before, he is honestly. If you ever see him at a game or anything, go up to him and have a chat with him. He's one of the nicest blokes you'll ever speak to. He obviously serves with RAF, you know, and he was called away last year on an operation, so he missed the end of the season, really crucial period. So he's like there, you know, he's serving his country. He's running this football team magnificently. And he watched the end of my walk. And when he watched the end of my walk, he said, I just got tearful. And he's a really emotional guy as well. He got tearful and he goes, it was absolutely inspiring to see. And then he just called me in and he goes, we're going to go into the team room. It was about 7 o'clock. And I just want you to say a few words to the girls, you know, and they're a fantastic bunch, you know. And I say to any fan, if you're ever free on a Sunday, 2 o'clock, it's free for season ticket holders. These girls, honestly, I am going to hold my hands up. Women's football got a bad press over a number of years, and we were all guilty of it. We watched it, and we all thought, oh, bloody hell, they don't know what they... And I'm not going to lie, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, it was like that. And when I went to my first game 4 years ago, I was like, wow. You know, Tammy George, she's only slight, but she's exactly what you need in midfield. She does not pull out of any challenges, any 50-50s. And these girls ain't getting paid wages or anything. They're actually working. They're lawyers and solicitors and nurses, you know, and then they're putting and Dan McNamara's got them all singing off the same hymn sheet. He's a brilliant coach, brilliant manager, has everybody in a huddle at the end of the game, and he talks to them on the field, and it's a lot of togetherness there. So yeah, get down there, and they beat West Brom easily in the end, didn't they, Dave?
They showed character. We could to come back from not the best the first half, and came back, got that really good penalty, well cracking penalty, and then the second half they just took control of the game and won 3-1, didn't they? And then they
Amber Hughes has scored 9 goals in 8 games. You know, she's like the speed ball of their season at the moment. So you know, please go down. There was nearly 900 fans there. You know, it's a bit of a shame for me that they moved to Telford. They had to because the ground wasn't fit for purpose at Castlecroft. If they do move up the leagues. And it is a little bit of a journey. I feel sorry for the local residents around Castlecroft that used to walk down to the game, who are probably missing out. But there's still 900 people there, so get down there, support them, and they interact. All the girls interact with all the fans. The managers will speak to you. The staff will speak to you, and you get like a close sort of bird's eye view of how, you know, the club is run, and it's good to see. So.
Jason, have you had a chance to get down yourself recently to see the ladies?
I haven't, no, but I interviewed Dan McNamara
on
the podcast, and honestly, he was brilliant. Yeah. And I've also, who did I interview? Manny, remind me.
Oh, Anna Price, the captain.
Anna Price, sorry, Anna. I interviewed Anna Price, and once again, absolutely brilliant. And I'll tell a quick story about women's football. So about 25 years ago, probably a bit longer, actually. We was playing down at Dunstall, forgot what it was called now. It was like an indoor place. And the team we was playing didn't turn up in our little league. And there was a women's league. And this other team were playing didn't turn up. So these girls said, we'll play you. So me and my mates were going, we'll just put 10 past these. Do you know what I mean? I'm not even going to put my shin pads on, all that. Anyway, after about 5 minutes, we're 3-0 down. And, right. We're looking at each other, we're arguing, pushing each other. We're like, I think we ended up drawing 7-all in the end, and I've never sweat so much in my life. But what I will say is, there's so many positives around the club at the minute with the foundation, obviously Wolves Women. There's so many, we're having a lot of wins at the results in the Premier League, which is, the main part of the club, I guess. But do you know what? The women's football is amazing, and it's really good how it's bringing people together. I mean, that crowd, 900 people. That's massive.
Fantastic.
That's huge, yeah.
That is massive. And Manny, I know why they had a bad first half, because she was giving the flipping team talk. That's why
I know. I did dare them. I said, if you've got any... I'm pretty sure I actually said to them, if you've got any balls... If you got any balls, if you score a goal,
if they have, they shouldn't be playing.
They should be playing for us.
No, didn't want to invite you to the samosa.
I said to him, I want you to come over to the samosa stand and grab a samosa off me when you score. And so when they knocked the third one in, and it was like the end of the game, the captain, Helen Dermody, she ran over and grabbed a samosa and took a big bite out of it, and which is fantastic, it was brilliant, really, really lovely girls, and
brilliant,
it was superb to see.
It was funny, and you got that photo off as well. Jack, I suppose you've been down because you pretty much go to watch all the teams. Your thoughts on the progression over the last few years as well?
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, because I work in a school, and the school that I'm at, we're part of something called the Black Country School Games. And we take part in all sorts of sports. And the feedback we're getting is that girls football, as it is the fastest growing participation sport in the country. There are girls queuing up now to play football, to get involved in local teams. There's just not enough teams in some places for them to get involved. I mean, I remember 2 years ago, maybe we took our girls team to a tournament next to the Hawthorn. So I had my injections before we went. And I think there's only three teams turned up. And this time we went this year, there was 12. So it's grown fourfold in a couple of years. And I think it's fantastic. And I think someone's just put in the comments, football is for everyone. And I think that is so true. I think whatever race, whatever gender you are, football is about enjoyment. And I think whether you're, like we've just said, it's for everyone to enjoy. And I think it's fantastic. And I would say to everyone,
if you've not been to a women's game, it's like what Manny said, it's like, it's actually really entertaining. And then watch the Lionesses when they played as well. And we were all gripped through the European Championships and stuff. So, and if you want to really taste it, go down to the new Buckshead Stadium and actually take in a game, take in the atmosphere. And I dare you not to come out having enjoyed it and enjoyed the atmosphere and the day, because it's still football. It's not on a Premier League level and stuff like that, but it's still good, isn't it?
That's a good comment, what Rebecca made, that football is for everyone and not just for men, because if she'd watched how me, you and Manny played, Dave, looking at my grand downstairs, he's 14, he could have done better.
He could have, man. It really is, we've just got to encourage everybody, to do as much as they can in different aspects of the club. It's not just... Yeah. yeah, we concentrate so much on the first team, but there's so many different avenues, what they do with the kids, what they do with disabled athletes. They do walking football, Friday evening football. They so many different activities for Wolves fans to get involved in. You know, obviously Sleepout's coming soon, and you know, people should sign up to that if they can do it on November the 18th. That's a really, really good event. And so there's lots of different aspects to the club that you can get involved in, and you get your kids involved as well. So, you know, the kids, the amount of girls that go to the women's games, you know, there's just a line of girls waiting for like photographs and autographs afterwards. And so get yourselves down there, and bucket list to get down to Telford. You ain't got a very good bucket list, you, right?
Absolutely.
Whoever that was.
Anyway, let's look ahead to the game at the weekend. It's going to be Leicester. You never know. It might be a new manager. He might be in the stands. Steve Davis and co preparing the team. Leicester not having the best start of the season as well. Wolves managed to get that victory against Forest last week. If we do win the game against Leicester at the weekend, we'll be on 12 points from 12 games, which is enough over the season, a point a game. Jack, your expectations ahead of that one?
I mean, I think if we're being honest, we're probably back to where we were before the Forest game, where we're just sitting here thinking we just need to win. We just, even if we're not the best performance, if it's a scrappy 1-0 win with a deflection, we've got to take it at this point, haven't we? Because we just need to get points on the board. I think the manager situation, I think, may well be resolved by then, which I think will be a lift for everyone. I mean, again, like we were saying when we were chatting at Samoa's a Saturday before the Forest game, it was a distraction, wasn't it? Everyone was talking about Nuno and all this kind of thing. They weren't talking about the game. Whereas I think once we've got this manager in place, if it is Beale and if he's in this dugout or if he's in the stands, whatever, that then means everyone can then focus on what's going on the pitch. I thought the atmosphere was fantastic against Forest. I was quite nervous going into it because I thought it would be jumpy and edgy. But it was really, really good. And I think if we can get that again against Leicester, and if someone said earlier in the comments, we've got to get at them from the start. I mean, their defensive record is a shambles this year. So if we get an early goal, I think they'll be thinking, oh, here we go again. We're going to let in two or three here. We've got to start positively and we've got to finish it off as well. We can't go into our shot towards the end.
Score prediction, Jack?
I'm going to go 1-0 again. 1-0 Wolves. Costa.
Mane?
Again, Jack's right. You know, it's gone into that situation again where points are the most important thing. It's not about performances anymore. We've played enough pretty football. No more flicks, please, Pedence and Guedes. No more, you know, little back heels. You used to see one back heel a season. He used to, like, get on some highlights video. Now you see about seven of them.
Pedence loves a back heel.
Yeah, you know, when you're chasing a game, just want to play the simple ball, play the forward ball, play more progressive football. And if we produce even 90%, 80% of the first half against Palace, against Leicester, then we'll win the game because, you know, against Forest, we didn't play brilliantly, but we got the result. But we need to... Leicester, we can get at them defensively, but we know Leicester, you know, likes of Madison and Demarai, right? They've got some decent forward players, Harvey Barnes. They've got some really decent forward players like Palace had as well. So it's not, you know... foregone conclusion, especially with the way we've been playing. But one thing I liked was Steve Davis before the Forest game, he called for an atmosphere. He called on the fans to make Molineux a bit of a fortress. I don't think Bruno Large ever did that in his time, you know, and Nuno used to do it a lot and Steve Davis did it as well. If we can get the appointment of Beale sort of announced beforehand, that will, you know, it just gets a murmur and it gets a bit of excitement created amongst the fans before they get to the match. And hopefully all you need is one Boubacar Traore late challenge, you know, and gets a ticking off and it raises all the crowd and everybody gets behind the team and hopefully roar onto a win. And I'm going to go for our first two-goal cushion in 9 months. I'm going to go for 2-0 and, that's just, you know, you've got to make that Molineux can be a fearful, you know, place for any opposition. We've heard players from opposition sides say in the past, you know, bloody hell, going to Molineux is a real, real hard place and the fans really get on your back. And we need to do that. We need to, you know, lift it, especially if we get this new appointment and really roar our team up. And I said today, two extra goals still would have been a paltry season. But, you know, say Fulham and Bournemouth, two extra goals in those two games puts you mid-table, puts you 2 points off seventh. And everybody's thinking, it's not too bad, is it? So we're not a million miles away because the league, apart from two or three sides, is a bit of a much of a muchness, you know, and we've literally competed with every single side we've played against. We've just keep coming out on the wrong end. So hopefully on Sunday we can come out the right end.
I like the two goals, Manny. Jason, for you?
For me, Leicester aren't great defensively, as we can see, but they are very good going forward, as Manny and Jack have said, with the likes of Maddison, etc.
Yeah.
But they are fighting for their lives, so they're going to come to Molineux wanting 3 points, make no mistake, and they are a much, much, much better side than Forest. Whichever way you look at it, they are. You know, they've got a better team. These players have played together for a while, so it is going to be a really tough game. I'm going for a 1-0 Neves. I think Neves is going to score again. But if we do lose, I've got my banner ready saying Davies out.
Manny, you got any questions on your Facebook side of things?
I know, actually, again, all I say is there's a lot of comments, not questions, about, oh, this is a panic appointment. You know, he must have been fifth choice. He must have been this. What about Nuno? So I just say to people, you know, don't just look at the name because you haven't heard of him and he hasn't been fashionable. Look at his past, look at his interviews, look at what other players, other professionals, you know, Gerard Martinez is a very experienced goalkeeper. You know, especially Gerard, I never heard Klopp talking about his assistant. I've never heard Guardiola talk about his assistant. Gerard was talking about Michael Beale. He's the brains. He does everything. I am light years behind him. And you don't get a manager openly admitting that, you know. And
Mick McCarthy used to do it about Terry Connor.
Did he?
He did. Well,
there's a few questions on Twitter. We've got one. Do you think that Rob Edwards will be coming along with Beale if he takes the job, as he just missed out on another job, or as part of the setup possible?
Well, I think Rob Edwards wants to manage, doesn't he? And that's why Michael Beale's obviously cut his ties with Steven Gerrard. And I think Rob Edwards wants to manage. Would he accept a number two role again? You know, he's done a good job. I mean, the Watford job, he had to take that job because it is a big job. Was it a step too far? Maybe, maybe not. But listen, you're a dead man walking as soon as you take the Watford job. So I think for Rob, he deserves a chance to go on his own.
Mm. Absolutely.
The only thing I'd say is, that also proves to me that Wolves were also looking at young, homegrown managers. Yeah. If they've gone Edwards and now they've gone Beale, that they've also, alongside looking at, you know, the Mendes channel or the Portuguese channel, they've also looked at young, hungry British managers. So, you know, that, which is a good thing, because literally they've always sort of, you know, just rung George up and said, get us something because we're struggling. So that's a good thing, and he may not, we'll see. But like Jay says, he probably, after being a manager, he wants to probably continue being a manager.
And Jack, a question for you, final question tonight before we close the show, coming up to the 90-minute whistle. Jack, if Beale does get the job, or whoever gets the job, do you think Fosun will open the purse strings to support the manager in January?
I think they're probably going to have to, aren't they? I think we need a striker in January, regardless of who the manager is, regardless of where we are in the league table at that time. We need to bring reinforcements in strikers. I think in terms of whether it's Michael Beale, I think because he's orientated towards his coaching, he'll probably say, actually, I want to see what I can get out of this group of players first before I sort of start spending loads of money and bringing this player, this player, this player. Let's see what I can do with this group first. Yes, I'll bring in reinforcements up front, but let me see what I can do with this group of players before I start sort of splashing the money. So I wouldn't expect a massive sort of investment in January. I think they will go and get a striker. Yeah, I'd love someone like Ivan Toney, but whether that's realistic in January, I don't know. But we'll have to see.
Oh, you might. I'd love Ivan Toney in this team. Oh.
So would every other team, I think.
Yeah, I'd take Tony Daly at the minute.
You know, you're right. Down again. Terrible. I'm down the wing after half an hour.
No, you know, the money spending, we've already spent 100 million quid.
Yeah.
So our folks are going to go out and do it again. I just think, you know, that there's a problem we've got, and the problem, there's a real problem somewhere with Raul, and let's be honest. You know, it just seems a very, very strange situation.
Yeah.
Nobody's really clearly talking about what the injury is, how long it will take. And he's in Mexico.
But they've used it's come out, it's potentially something with his groin. So why is he going all the way to Mexico?
I don't understand, man.
He wants to play in the World Cup and the Mexican.
But
that shouldn't be the priority. He should be getting fit for us.
The thing with Jack says, you know, he wants to, he'll probably want to look at these players. But the problem is, between now and the transfer window opening, there's 5 games, isn't there? That's all he's got. He's got two at Christmas. He's got, if he's not in charge of Leicester, he's only got 3 more. So he's got 5 games before the transfer window opens because of the stupid, ridiculous Winter World Cup. So it's going to be like, but in a way, maybe that's a good thing because he gets this 6-week pre-season with his squad.
Well, been told that they are going on a Dubai training camp, the ones that aren't actually with the out away on international duty. They will be going to Dubai training camp during the World Cup. So it's a good, like you say, it would be like a pre-season, wouldn't it?
Well, maybe that's the that's probably done the deal for him. He's got a holiday in Dubai. Maybe, you know, but that'd be a good thing, I think, for the new manager. I think a lot of clubs will come this winter break because there'll be a 6-week period. That's when clubs like the Villas and the Leicesters and anybody who's down there struggling will make their decisions and say, let's get someone in so they've got this period to work before the season restarts again.
Absolutely. Listen, guys, it's been an absolutely fantastic. We're literally coming up to the final whistle, the 90-minute mark. Manny, how's your recovery going? You know, are you just having a little bit of a downtime now before your next epic?
Mate, there's nothing planned. Honestly, people say, what's next plan? There's nothing. I'm pretty much, you know, we'll go week by week and see if anything comes up. But there's nothing planned this year. Just I'm back in the gym. I've been back in the gym just to get
on your Instagram story.
Legs moving again and they're still a little bit sore. But, you know, it's been fantastic what, you know, all the fundraisers, like, you know, Jason does so much. We've just seen Neil Taylor climbing, you know, every bloody mountain in the world. You know, it's fantastic what people at Wolves do together to raise. Literally, I remember speaking to the Express and Star last, I said, if you actually total up all the fundraisers who help out in the name of the club and use the fan base, it literally goes into millions of pounds. And that's, you know, fantastic and should be applauded and celebrated. And every fan's got a part to play, every single fan. So, you know.
I mean, Manny, with you walking to Chelsea and Neil walking up all these mountains, I genuinely have trouble walking up the stairs.
I'll sponsor you.
Yeah, please do.
Jason walks up the stairs.
And there is that one day there will be that book that we've been talking about coming. You've got plenty of chapters, sir.
We'll have to write a joint book about how to mute followers on Twitter and save yourself.
It'll be a bestseller. That will. We'll get Jason in on that one as well. We won't ask Jack because he don't do Twitter very widely.
Yeah, Jack's dodging a bullet. Good man, Jack.
He is. Yeah.
Jack, what are you up to in the world at the moment? And, you know, tell anyone that anything interesting going on with yourself or just following the team?
Just following the team, really, isn't it? I mean, I think, obviously, World Cup's on the horizon, isn't it? So, I think, I don't know how people feel. I'm not kind of overly keen on this World Cup. I don't feel the same buzz as what everyone else is kind of, not what you normally do. So, I think it's going to be interesting. I mean, I'm not sure quite how many players we'll have going, actually. Because, I mean, we were talking, weren't we, before about, we'll have massive disruption. I think maybe four or five.
Yeah. All Portuguese, probably.
Yeah, and Wang. Yeah. So, but I mean, yeah. So, looking forward to seeing the World Cup, how it plays out in the winter. So, I mean.
And then Boxing Day fixture and we're back at it. Jason, just to let everyone know, I've just decided, take a listen to Jason's Wolf Whistle podcast. Absolutely brilliant. Love it. Always listen to every episode. Recently had Bully on there, got Jeff Thomas coming out this week, and you've got a few events coming up over the next period. You just want to let people know about that?
Yeah, very quickly. So Jeff Thomas, we did recorded a podcast with him earlier in the week. He was absolutely brilliant. Spoke about his leukemia battle. He spoke about, obviously, joining Wolves. He spoke about the injury against Sunderland, where it all went wrong, etc. So that was a great podcast. So that comes out on Friday. The events we've got, greatest manager in Wolves history, Dean Saunders, is at the Mount Hotel next week.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, 27th of October. So he's going to bring the house down. He actually rung me the other day, by the way, and he was going, oh, I don't really want to talk about my time at Wolves. And I said, that's all I've advertised. You've got to, Dean.
But he was literally... you not talk about the time at Wolves?
He was trying to back it. Oh, I'll talk about my career at Villa and Liverpool. And I went, listen, I said, look. Anyway, he's going to do it because I've talked to him. I've told him he's got to do it. 1st of December, we've got the Wolves All-Stars Christmas party with the Wolfpack Howlers.
Book the table.
So that's always a great night. And on the 4th of December, which is the Sunday, we're at the Mount Hotel again for the memorabilia fair. There's 6 or 7 stalls, loads of memorabilia, so a chance to get some bargains and some Christmas gifts.
Fantastic. Excellent. Guys, listen, thank you ever so much for joining tonight. It's been a great podcast. We're just into the 4th minute of added time. And you never know that by the weekend, we could have a new manager is in who is the real Beal. There's a tumbleweed moment if ever I've heard one. Guys, thank
and
you.
And then there was silence and everybody switched off.
It was that moment where... And the real Beal. Guys, thanks everyone that's joining the chat. We've went well over 150 watching. If you're watching it back on the live catch-up or on the podcast, I really hope you've enjoyed it. And we'll see you on the next one. We're only 4 short of 100, which would be a major
total. Hell, 100. Well, so we'll you're going to have something special lined up there.
we'll have to talk about that, see what we can sort out for that. Guys, for myself, Jason, Jack and Manny, love to you and your families, wherever you are. Keep the faith. Out of darkness cometh light. Always Wolves.
Always Wolves.
Cheers.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates are already booked in for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.